Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
A very interesting discussion with Joe Pantoliano. He's been in every movie you've ever seen and is a great actor. But, wow, we really delve into his past, and I found it pretty damn interesting. All right, so we'll get into that. We'll get into the news. First, I'll tell you about NetSuite. If you're a business owner, you don't need us telling you how tough it is out there. But you may be making it harder than necessary. Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down. Stop paying for multiple systems that don't give you the info you need when you need it. Upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. Get visibility and control over financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more all in one place instantaneously. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time, save money with NetSuite. Right, Dawson?
Join the over 22,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Adam. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Adam. netsuite.com/Adam.
Real men are an endangered species. Shouted down and hunted. But Adam knows you're out there, alone in a sea of cowards. That's why he built a place for you rare breeds to come together. That's why he created Renaissance Man. At RenManUSA.com, you'll find your one-stop shop for all the products that Adam and real men like yourselves actually want. Things for the outdoorsman, the drinker, the driver, and yes, the lover. Renaissance Man is where Carolla fans go to find carefully curated gifts, vacation packages, and articles on things that are actually interesting, not blogs about which statues should go next. It's a calling card, a place for those who understand that the noblest pleasure in life is living it well. Head to RenManUSA.com for yourself or the man in your life, and get ready, because this Christmas, Adam Carolla brings you Renaissance Man.
All right, Joe Pantoliano has joined us. The movie is called From the Vine. It's available now on digital and video on demand. I've only watched a trailer, and the trailer looks great. And here's how you know it's good. It's currently at 85% with the critics on Rotten Tomatoes, which I've made a few movies. It is hard to get to 85, and 80 with the audience. So fresh all the way around. Of course, Joe, we talked about Bad Boys 1, 2, and 3, Matrix, Memento, Midnight Run, which I love, The Fugitive, Goonies, Risky Business, so much. And such a long career. Good to speak to you, Joe.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you for having me.
First off, I just heard you were hit by a car in May and had a kind of bad accident. So how's your health?
I was hit by an SUV. And it was hit by an SUV. I was waiting to cross the street. And I got messed up. You know, I've had trauma. Broke a bone in my eardrum, so now I need a hearing aid. I use a hearing aid for this, and you know, like today it's raining, so I can feel it in my knee and my back. And I had 10 stitches in my head, the top of my head. So my leading man career might be at an end. You know,
yeah, you're gonna.
But I'm doing okay, thank God.
You're gonna get to keep your shirt on for a change when you make a movie now. So, Joe, we'll talk about the current movie, but first off, as I'm looking back on your career, I just realized you've always been in a movie since I sort of remember paying attention. When did you start? What year did you start?
Well, you know, I graduated high school in 1970, and my last year of high school, I enrolled in an acting school in New York. And So I mean, technically started in 1970. I think I got my SAG card in 1972. So I've been a member of the union since 72. And I got, so, but that was the first job I got was 1972, if that counts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as an actor, it's either, well, when did you start? Or when did you start making a living? And so for that didn't happen until 1979. So I think the first 8 years, I made a gross amount of $7,000 over an 8 year period.
But went on to do some of the most memorable roles in these films. I mean, like I said, Midnight Run is one of my favorite films that people don't talk enough about. And you kind of, I feel like your roles, and then The Sopranos, obviously, but your roles are great because you show up, sort of steal a scene, and then we don't see you for a couple of scenes, and then you come back and steal another scene, and then we don't see you for a few scenes. That's the way to do it, to go up, pinch hit a home run, and then go back and hang back a little bit. And I feel like, as I'm thinking about your career and I'm thinking about those roles, like in Risky Business, were you Carmine the Pimp? What pimp were you?
Guido.
Guido the Pimp. It's like, just show up.
Guido the Killer Pimp.
Yes, just kick the shit out of one scene and then go, and then we don't see it for 20 minutes and then back. You know what I mean? So, were you always planning? Do you have a choice between going, I'm going to be a leading man or I'm going to be a character actor, or is that just dictated to you?
Well, you know, it's a matter of what you say yes to. And I remember, I mean, my first really important job was the remake of From Here to Eternity for NBC. It was a 6-hour miniseries, and I got to reprieve the role that re-established Frank Sinatra. That was a big to-do for me. But then I didn't work for 12 months. And I was going up for all of these back in those days. You know, this is the late 70s. I was going up for all of these parts and getting in the room, but losing out to other guys. And I thought, you know, do I keep trying to do this, or do I try to find a niche in these supporting roles and becoming the best character actor I can be? Because I wanted longevity. I didn't want a 8-year career or a 4-year career. I wanted to be able to have a 30-year career. And so the idea was, is how to be, to diversify my work and go from different types of characters and different genres. And how do I continue to be noticed? How do I become, take these moments and make them memorable? That was always, you know, what do I do in order to be able to stand out without violating the attention of the filmmakers, you know, to be able to be unique and different and unusual, but also to service the material.
Gina.
I was saying before, the first thing I remember seeing you in was La Bamba when I was little. And I truly mean this, and I don't think anyone's going to disagree. You look exactly the same. So whatever you're doing, bottle it so we can buy it. I'm sure you've heard this a lot. I've been lying. I'm maybe the biggest Soprano fan on the planet. We're on our 17th viewing now, full series. Ralph Cifaretto, one of the greatest characters of all time. Very obviously twisted and demented, but a good earner and good at his job, and had a little bit of pathos, you know, when it came to his son. And I have a couple of questions about that I've been dying to ask you. But one question that's almost broken up my relationship multiple times in 3 years, I have to know, this might be my only chance to ever ask you, do you think Ralph killed the horse?
He didn't kill the horse. I think that was the whole arc.
Vindication.
You know, if you study what David Chase was doing is he introduced the Ralph character with his obsession of the gladiator.
Yes.
If you remember, he's
the new
he's
gladiator
with, well, all of it. Remember, he gets all, he gets really bent out of shape when
they didn't wear flat tops in ancient Rome.
That's right. Kirk Douglas. And he's, you know, so the honor of a gladiator, a fighting to the death. So if you take that first scene when you meet him, and he's fighting to the death, mm-hmm. and then you know, and then he kills the young girl.
Yes.
And then he gets promoted. Mm-hmm. But then the horse, Tony is incensed that he thinks he killed this horse, he wants to punish him over a horse, but when it was a young, teenage young girl, that's a whole other story.
Right.
And also the fact that they fight to the death. It wasn't a mob hit. It
right.
was something that Tony had to cover up. That it was two men trying to kill each other like gladiators. I had asked David because it was an accident.
Right.
he was just really all bent out of shape about his son being, dying. His son was dying and probably did die.
Joe?
Well, thank you. This is so incredibly satisfying. I can't thank you enough.
I have a completely different question here. I'm reading here. Your dad was a hearse driver. Your mom was a bookie and a seamstress. And your stepfather spent 21 years in prison for drug trafficking. So let's unpack that a little bit. Your dad drove a hearse back when that was kind of a job, right? Like funeral.
Well, my dad had a heart attack when he was 50, and he couldn't work anymore. So he was collecting Social Security and a pension from the military, but he was a foreman in a factory in Hoboken, and so he was working at the funeral parlor in Hoboken, and he did everything. He picked up bodies. He was a pallbearer, and they would pay him cash. My cousin Florio, who was my third cousin, my mother's third cousin, so he would have been my fourth cousin. It turns out that he was actually my biological father. So I'm really my last name really isn't Pantoliano. I mean, it is legally, but my father Dominic. Knew that Florio was the biological father, and he pitched hit for him. My mom, we were really poor. We lived in the projects. We lived on welfare, and she ran numbers down the Jersey Shore in Long Branch, New Jersey, in order to be able to, so that we could have a summer vacation. She would work for the bookies, and she was in charge of three or four of the boarding houses on that block in Long Branch. But she was a seamstress. She, most of her life, we would do piecework. She put me to work. I was working at 9, 10 years old, where she would cut patches for United States military, sergeant patches and corporal patches. It was piecework. You take a big roll of it and you would cut the piecework, and then each piece, 12 to a dozen, and she would get, I don't know, 5 cents or a penny a patch.
The patchwork discussion is all well and good, but I want to get back to the illegitimate child part, because I feel there's more meat on that bone. So can we unpack that? How did that work?
My sister and I, there was always the rumor. If you read my first book, Who's Sorry Now, I talked about that, because my mother told me when she left my father, she said, Flory's your father, not Monk. But then she got, I guess she was guilty. She felt guilty. So she took it back. It was like Faye Dunaway.
But your dad always knew, right?
My father, everybody knew. Everybody knew except me. My aunts knew. My cousins knew. And when Flory came home, he moved in with us. It was, the five of us. And then what happened was, years later, because I put it in the book, my sister was upset with me. So I was staying with Chris Maloney and I was doing a show in Hollywood, and he said, "Why don't you have you heard about this 23andMe? Do the 23andMe, and you know you can prove that you biologically have the same father, and that'll be that." And so I did. I sent her the kit. It comes back, and we don't share the same biological father.
Oh boy! And you found this out how long ago?
Oh, I was 61 years old.
So it was 7 years ago or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
How did that affect your sister?
Oh, she was angry at my mom. You know, it's like, why didn't they tell us? It's like, you know, we are so encapsulated as an American culture. We're somewhat self-centered. I was talking to someone today about the movie, Italian American group, and it's like, I'm not Italian American. I'm an American of Italian descent. I don't speak the language. I've been to Italy, but if I'm tribal at all, I'm from Hoboken. I'm a Jersey kid. And so the idea that, you know, our parents were young, our parents had a life. It was a world war going on. There was a lot of stuff going on then, you know, I mean, it was over by the time I rolled in. It's interesting.
What happened with then your biological dad going off to prison for 21 years?
Well, he didn't go for 21. It was, you know, a cumulative. Mm. The last time he went away, I recall going to the federal holding facility in New York City on West Street to say goodbye to him, and the plexiglass, and he had the number on his shirt, and picked up the phone and said goodbye to Cousin Flory. It was. I guess it's like having a pet rat, you know, it's like Christmas. It was a big deal because in my neighborhood, if you had wise guy connections, it was almost like being a celebrity. So we'd send provolone and salami, soubrasad, and we'd mail it to Atlanta for Christmas and Easter. We would send Easter baskets. And it was a big deal. When I was doing Bad Boys for Life, I actually drove to Atlanta Federal Penitentiary to see where he lived for those 7 years. And it was an eerie feeling. The whole idea of my first book, Who's Sorry Now, was the idea that here was a guy who was a criminal who did really bad things. He was an outlaw, but he came home and he was the mentor and the father to me, a bad guy who did really good things for a young boy.
Well, you call him Cousin Florio, but you knew he was your biological dad when he was going away to prison, right?
No. That's the whole ruse, is that I'd go to see Aunt Lizzie, his mom. My mom would take me every weekend to see Aunt Lizzie. Well, it turns out she was my grandmother.
Oh boy,
you know,
man,
his mom.
How's that white? When's that white privilege going to start kicking in? It's crazy when you hear everyone's story, isn't it? Like,
it's a lot. I mean, this happened a lot. It happens a lot now. I guess it happens more than it does now because, people tend to abort. You know, you have a unwanted pregnancy. Now, and then there was no way to know, right? Unless you had the same eyes or the same nose. You know, my mother had brown eyes and my father, Dominic, had brown eyes and I had blue eyes and Flory has blue eyes.
Interesting.
Yeah. And my daughter Isabella, because his name was Florio Isabella.
Well,
I named my daughter Isabella after him in honor of him. So she's really Isabella.
It's so interesting that I'm just sort of looking at it through today's societal eyes. Like, we're living in a time where a lot of young people really don't have problems, but they're manufacturing some grief and some grievance and some problems. And then you talk to all the people that really did have problems, but they didn't act like they had problems. Mm-hmm. They were just young, and that was life. you know, it's kind of an interesting thing as I think about, because I think about my own 14-year-old twins. They don't have problems, not the kind of problems that we had, but they will make a problem out of nothing, because that's what they do. When you don't really give someone problems, they manufacture problems. When I grew up, we had real problems. Joe had real problems, but we never really thought about it because we were living it. Like when your life is a problem, when your life is a struggle, you're just involved with the struggle. You know, if you're being chased by a bear, you're not sitting around reflecting on being chased by a bear. Right. You're just running. You know, your life is just, you have to go here to find that. You have to eat over there. You have to stay there. Where are we going to go? Kind of thing. Where's the money? You're so in the middle of it that you don't really experience it. And the people that don't really have problems are probably experiencing their problems to a greater degree because they're just sitting there and it's all stewing in their head.
We had something. We had something that these kids don't have. We had stick ball. We had stoop ball. We had touch football. I would come home from school. We would go back to the playground, and you would play until 6 o'clock. So we were always moving. We were always sweating. We were always, you know, fighting. These kids are just, they're not burning any calories, or they're not producing dopamine or serotonin. And you get really anxious when you're just looking at that computer screen all the time. I mean, I was looking at a new phone, right? And it's like, why do I need a phone? Because nobody ever calls me. I don't talk on it anymore. So can I just get a computer? I was talking to the provider, AT&T. I said, look, don't I get a discount because I never talk to anybody?
And they're like, you're talking to me, sir. Yeah, that physicality thing is interesting, because obviously everyone knows that exercise and movement and sweat, like how important it is for your brain and your peace of mind and your disposition emotionally. But, you know, when we were being physical, it was sort of physical with a purpose. If you're playing pickup football, or you're playing stickball, or you're playing one of the many games that we would play after school, it was not only did you get the sweat and the movement and the energy, but you were playing a game. You weren't on a treadmill or a rowing machine or sort of synthesized exercise machine, you know, staring at a computer screen. You were physically engaged. So it was like, it was two parts. It was, you got the physical part.
We were
part.
Playing, yes. But that's the thing, is we were playing. We were having fun.
Right.
And we were getting exercise as a benefit of it. We didn't go, you know, we were just having fun. Now everybody's having fun playing these games or watching other people play games.
Right.
How about that? My daughter does that all the time. And she walks around the house like this. She's got this thing on all the time.
Got the headset.
She's got the computer, and then she's got the phone. She's got like double barrel.
Right.
And
And also there was another part to the physicality, which is work was physical. And then you had some sense of accomplishment. You had to stack a bunch of wood and move it to the other side, or just physically moving things. You got the physical part, but then you also got the sort of satisfaction of that. The scariest video games, as I think of them now, are those build a village ones, where it's like, we're gonna declare so-and-so's a mayor, and then we're gonna build a river. And it's like, you're synthesizing building a community alone with your pants around your ankles in your one bedroom apartment. That's scary now. I think the silence means everyone agrees with that.
No pushback there.
Brian, I know you saw the movie. Brian's our movie critic. He's our film buff. And so I think I'll give Brian a chance to talk about From the Vine.
I didn't much care for it, so I don't know what to say.
All right, no, Joe, any other family members in prison?
No, I did. I saw the movie. I liked it a lot. It's rare, Joe, and I'm very glad to be able to say my favorite part of the movie was your performance. It's rare that, you know, an actor will come in and that's my favorite part of the movie. I really enjoyed it. I'm a fan of yours, as we all are. And just about every movie I can think of you in as a supporting actor or whatever, you're very bombastic. You're loud. You have personality. You're colorful. And in this movie, Adam's joking about the leading man status, but you're the leading man. You carry the movie. You're in every scene, but maybe two. And you're very subdued in a sense. You talk about your approach to the character and how was it a conscious choice to be very different than what people are used to, or to just kind of work out that way?
Yeah, no, it was absolutely conscious. When you meet me in Toronto, I'm working. I'm a CEO. This is before I lose my job. So I wanted to see an evolution of what he was like, and then what Italy does to him, and how he evolves and kind of finds his usefulness again, being back there and finding the love that was lost, that he didn't even know there was a lost love with his wife. And he was so busy. And I think that's an American thing. The idea of working hard and making money and then you'll be happy. And this guy kind of hit the precipice, had everything he thought was going to make him happy, and he'd lost it all. And so he kind of has a mental breakdown and winds up back in the country that he was born in. He's lost his native language. He can't even hardly speak Italian any longer. So I wanted to make a statement about the American way. When I work in Canada, I'm always impressed on how they encourage the immigrants that come to their country to maintain their natural languages. You know, mm-hmm. So you have customs, Croatian neighborhoods, and you have Greek neighborhoods, Italian neighborhoods, and there's all these clusters, but they're all bilingual. So a lot of the actors in Italy were Canadian, but they all spoke Italian.
I didn't know that.
Hey, Joe, I'm reading here and talking about being clinically depressed for like a decade. What did you do to get yourself out of that? What are some of the, I think a lot of people listening are probably pretty depressed about now with all the lockdowns and society and all that's going on. How did you break out of that?
Well, you know, before I found out that I was sick, drugs, women, suicide, you know, escaping the pain in any way that I could. And then once I was able to get into treatment and find help, the idea of investigating where this trauma, it's in my case, in most cases, these are traumatic events that happen to you in your adolescent period that go unresolved and untreated, and they just multiply. And so, you know, Joe Biden said this a week ago. He said that, you know, alcoholism and drug addiction doesn't cause mental illness. Mental illness causes alcoholism and drug addiction. I just wanted the pain to go away, and I discovered Vicodin, you know, painkillers, and they put up a bounce in my step. And then when I was taking, you know, 15 a day, and that feeling eluded me. That's the problem with drugs, is that it eludes you. It doesn't, you don't get that feeling any longer. And then you're just sick if you don't take them. So it's got a hold of you twice. In this long recovery period, I became really fascinated by finding out that I only thought that it was very unusual to feel this sadness that lived inside of me. I didn't know other people felt that way. So I was ashamed of this feeling. I thought that I was the only one that felt this way. And so when I discovered that it was a disease, I felt like I hit the lottery. And in recovering and treating it and finding out ways to treat it, like what we talked about, exercise and all of this behavioral choices, I was able to really get myself back. And now when the feeling comes, when the depression comes, I can investigate and see if it's situational. Because when it happened to me, I was sitting on top of the world. I had a great job. I had just won a bunch of awards. And I was like, well, gee, all of the things that I thought was going to make this go away, it's still here now with a vengeance. You know, what's wrong with me? Shame on you. So I think people, the best advice is to continue to talk about it, especially now with the advent of all of this, the electronic Zoom calling, that you can talk to people. There are all these wonderful 12-step programs for depression, for anxiety, for alcoholism, for drug addiction. And you really can be anonymous. You don't have to tell them who you are. They don't even have to see who you are. And you can just listen to other people talking about their day, and you feel, you know, you have a empathetic understanding, and you feel less alone.
What do you do when you were, when you're on Vicodin and you get off Vicodin and then you get hit by an SUV when you're taking a walk?
It's a good question.
How do you manage that?
Well, you know, they gave me the medicine. They gave it to my wife because they knew that I was a drug addict. And Nancy gave me one. And the thing was, is that it didn't speak to me anymore. That I didn't like the way it felt. And I had a bad knee and back. And the thing is that I can't take, ibuprofen
Tylenol?
Anymore.
Yeah.
No, Tylenol I can
Advil.
Take. The other one.
Ibuprofen.
Right. Yeah. It's not good for my kidney. Mm-hmm. But you know, you understand. I understand. Regulated. I understand. If I want to escape, then I just want to die. So I was in good shape. I was quite relieved that I didn't need it for that any longer.
So let's talk about this a little more, because I'm fascinated by it. What is your protocol today? Do you see a therapist? I know we talked about the exercise and the movement part. Is there a diet part? Is there mindfulness and meditation? Is there, you know, saunas? Like what's the protocol?
All of that. But I try to exercise 35 to 40 minutes a day. Take a walk, a long walk. That's the walk I was taking when I got hit by the car. But also I have a elliptical that I get on. I have an app, a food app that, you know, I count my calories. I talk to my friends. I talk to a psychiatrist. At any given time in my house, somebody's on their computer talking to their doctor.
Yeah.
But you know, I know when this feeling comes, and it comes, it comes and goes, that it's not permanent and that I'm not broken. It's only when I do that inventory and I say, okay, well, what's going on? Why am I feeling this way? And sometimes it's chemical, you know, it's like, okay, so go take a walk, because they're saying now that a 15 minute walk is the equivalent of like 40 milligrams of Prozac.
Yeah. It's insane. The effect, or maybe it's not, maybe we should have known this all along, but the how it engages you. I mean, think about how much better you communicate when you walk. Like it's funny. I knew this when I was a kid. When I was like 15, I had a friend named John Tyler, and he lived down the street. And almost every night, we just go for a long walk through North Hollywood. Just a long walk, and we'd be walking and talking. Like, think about how much clearer you are when you're sort of, and there's a physiological thing, because you're engaging your right side and your left side and your right hemisphere and your left hemisphere. But think about even something like, let's just say you had a great friend, a dear friend or family member, someone you just really enjoyed. Going out to dinner and talking is good. But if you took that same friend and went on a long walk, you would literally cover more ground verbally. Like, there's just more flow. There's more going on. Like, it somehow frees something up. Like, the movement yep. does that.
But the other thing is I think it's important to express this, that the feeling of sadness is a good thing. We're supposed to have these feelings. That's what fight or flight is all about. But culturally, because of advertising and the blitzing of advertising, we've been led to think that we're always supposed to feel good. And if buying a Chevrolet and seeing the USA in terms of that status or that zip code, that's going to make us feel better. And so when we don't feel well and the Chevy is not doing it for us, we tend to persecute ourselves, and put ourselves down because we haven't had the advertising that says it's okay to feel bad. You're just, you're doing your job. The fact that 40% of America is obese, right? 40%. Well, they're doing their job because we turn on a commercial and it's telling us to go to McDonald's. It's telling us to buy this. It's telling us to eat that. And so that's cool. And that's eats our anxiety away. In my case, my first drug of choice was food. You know, at 10, 11, 12 years old, I wound up putting 100 pounds on. And then I wanted, girls stopped looking at me and I wanted to be like Billy Maguire. And so I started starving myself because I thought that if I was thin again, that girls would be interested in me. So it's all of these, we should be teaching these behaviors in preschool. We should be doing mindfulness stuff in preschool. We should be doing yoga, teaching kids when they have a feeling to talk about those feelings. Because we're a society that waits for us to break before there's any available treatment.
Well, if Trump gets a second term, we can start implementing yoga as part of the curriculum. I've read his website. It's there. Yeah. When I was a kid, we played Smear the Queer. We're going to go from Smear the Queer to yoga.
Great game.
They play it competitively in the Middle East. I don't know if you guys know that. Hey, Joe, we've come to the end of our time here, but this has been very interesting.
It's been very interesting.
From the Vine is the name of the movie. Again, it's mid-high 80s on Rotten Tomatoes, and that is
great
hard
for depression.
To do.
If you want to feel
good.
Great
for depression. It's available now on digital and video on demand as well. Joe, thanks for joining us. I hope we can do this again soon. This has been cathartic.
It's nice to see you, Adam.
Good to see you. Joe, thanks for joining us. All right. We will take ourselves a quick break, come back with Gina Grad and the news.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So stay tuned for some unfinished business because Dawson's working on the replay of the winner of Totally Topical Trivia, TiVo Trivia. Brian is protesting, says he got in first. Gina swears she did.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear this.
I couldn't tell. So
based on no evidence, I am sure it was me.
So the challenge is on, and Dawson is working on it. So we'll that'll be breaking news. But go ahead, Gina.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're down another Disneyland. Disneyland Paris is temporarily closing again as France enters a second nationwide lockdown. We talked about that a little yesterday to curb a surge in coronavirus infections. So it hopes to be open for the holidays specifically. And they'll be taking reservations from December 19th to January 3rd. But then the park will be shut down January 4th to February 12th. President Macron announced a new nationwide lockdown on Wednesday that said it will last until December 1st at a minimum. So we're not the only Disneyland on the planet that is not going to be open.
Good. Our misery needed some company on this one.
And I don't know if you saw the latest on, you know, because we see how football games have been going. Well, what about the Super Bowl? So Super Bowl 54 is now laying down their strict rules about participation from fans.
Yeah. Where is it?
It is in Florida.
Good question.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll be
easy. According to ESPN, the league has decided to limit attendance at Tampa's Raymond James Stadium to 20% of the venue's usual 65,000 capacity.
I heard they were only going to do half an F-18 flyover. It was really just going to be the right side of the plane.
It would be the missing men formation.
That's right. Yes.
They, even though Republican Governor Rick DeSantis has been pushing to have a full house, they said, no, no, no. The NFL's also putting a mandatory mask.
Sorry, but I don't get why. Here we are. I guess we're halfway into the season or coming up on halfway into the season. There's another 4 months or 3.5 months or whatever it is. Well, why do we need to make the proclamation right now? Like, why can't we see how things play out in Florida over the next 2 months? Or, like, as far as capacity goes, like, I know you got to plan shit, like how many hot dogs to bring and stuff like that. But, I mean, the Super Bowl's now, what, early February?
February 7th.
Yeah, couldn't we do this? Couldn't we figure it out by the first of the year?
Like, yeah, Christmas.
Have some, know a little more, have a little more lead time. Or a little less lead time, but a little more information.
Right. And to that point, I believe, sorry, I was just getting a hot breaking tip from Dawson. 1 second. I was just getting information, too, that the Boston Marathon has been canceled, and that's in April. Mm. So why is
it all? They're looking at fall dates.
Yeah.
Again, like I don't know. Let's see how the rest of this year goes. Why put the kibosh on it so far in advance?
But I'm wondering when it came to music festivals like Coachella and all that stuff and big sporting events. I have no idea. But do you think they lost a lot of money in the planning than having to cancel, like pushing back? Was there money being spent with the pushing back where it's cheaper to just say fuck it?
I don't know, but I can't figure. It seems weird to lock off 20,000 people can attend a game so far in advance.
Well,
by the way, what if shit's a whole lot worse? Like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe 20's too much.
Yes, they have no problem, I'm sure, making it more restrictive.
My only guess is from overhearing Christy talk on so many business calls, it just occurred to me a lot of companies are planning fiscal year, Q1, Q2. Yeah.
Right.
So I think when you're dealing with massive sponsors, the Bud Lights and the Fords and the GMs of the world, they're planning really far in advance, and that involves travel and signage and all that stuff.
So there.
All right, Dawson,
we have some hot audio ready, I think.
Yes, the audio evidence is clear and indisputable. I will let you guys be the judge. A teenage girl vacationing for the summer.
Pete.
Brian.
Blame it on Rio.
At a Catskills resort.
Gina. Dirty Dan. Wait.
That was Brian.
Wait.
Brian came in right after Pete. And
why did we all totally ignore you?
I wonder why.
Because he's
so...
I'm
a smug bastard. I said it as soon as Pete said it, and then you jumped in, obviously, because you knew what it was. But I was like, wait a minute, I've rang in. I did the.
Oh wow! So, this is we're having a
with
we're
an
having,
asterisk and under protest. Bald Brian gets the win.
That was a Revenant moment with you the thinking.
I want to share this with Gina. She deserves as much as I do.
That's so weird. God, we weren't even a blip on my radar in that moment.
Chris, well, you were locked in. Chris says we can do a tiebreaker, but it's not a tie, right?
No.
Brian won.
It's like when it's like when the coach throws the red flag. We don't make him do the play over again. They say, no, wrong. He was in bounds.
That's right. All right. Sorry, Gina, if you're capable of it, continue.
All right. I'll choke back the tears. That was a fun game, though.
Yeah.
So you guys like The Masked Singer? Well, what do you think of The Masked Dancer? Because that is next.
The producers of The Masked Singer were like, our celebrities aren't sweating enough. How do we get them to perspire more? Well, we could dress them up like an eagle and put a giant paper mache eagle head on them. I feel like that would be, yeah.
But what about, where's the cardio?
They're moving, but they're singing. We need one where they're just like the masked, Bowflex model or something. Like, how much fucking sweating you're going to be doing if you do the masked dancer? People are going to die out there. They're going to die. We're going to lose celebrities.
This is interesting, and I can see some of the razzle dazzle and a little bit of a workaround, but let me explain it to you. It's going to be hosted by Craig Robinson and operates under much of the same premise. So the press release says costume celebrities will be joined on stage by masked partners and backup dancers, who I imagine will be doing a lot of heavy lifting, as they perform a series of dances together spanning from hip hop to salsa, jazz to tap, and more. Each week, a series of clues will be sprinkled in, blah, 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 blah.
Is
we come closer to figuring out who the...
sad that we've just thrown in the towel on primetime entertainment. We went like, fuck it. Let's just rip off some shows from Japan and just fucking...
It's all gimmicky.
Just do it. A bunch of lights and shit. What? How? Speaking of that, how's Johnny Weir doing on Dancing with the Stars? Oh, yeah. I want to know what the line is. Is that Caitlin? Is she in front now?
Let's see here. So yeah, Johnny Weir's at +150, Caitlin at +200,
ooh,
and Nev Schulman at +225. So those are the top three.
All right, wow. So Weir's still got the best odds now. I mean. Yeah, he's the favorite. Yeah. Okay, good.
I want to interrupt here really quick. I just heard back from the judges. We cannot give Brian the win because he never actually said Dirty Dancing.
I didn't know what it was.
He thought it was blaming on Rhea.
There's no way
we
can tell.
Are you shitting me?
There's no way we can tell. So we need to do one more.
Okay.
That's some real horseshit. That's some horseshit right there, man. I honestly think I didn't fucking know.
You never gave
Are
the
you
answer.
Familiar with that title, Brian? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Oh, well, what would you say? Of course you are now.
I'll go get the fucking birth announcement for a test that was made after Dirty Dancing. It was a parody.
We're doing one more. We're doing now. It just wasn't
right
sitting
now?
Well with me. We're doing it right now.
Hey, Brian.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I were you, I'd stop complaining and get my head right.
In the game, because it's on. I must protect this house.
Okay, everybody be quiet.
Here we go.
Here we go.
A documentary film crew on a boat in the Amazon.
Gina. Hold on. Robert Downey Jr. and Tom Cruise.
Oh, no, that's not right.
It's Anaconda. Come on.
No.
It is Anaconda.
What?
For the win.
Adam Carolla.
Yes.
You're like a Tropic Thunder.
The judges say that's okay. Congratulations,
Ace. From the grave.
You take home the trophy.
There's only one loser here.
It ain't over till the paint's dried, people.
Good. That's satisfying. God. Now I can I can move on. There
that's
we go.
Satisfying.
Continue, please.
Hey, listen. I'll bring the belt to the next round. You guys can claim it if you're good enough.
Anaconda.
I think we
in
proved
what world
good
would
enough.
I've seen Anaconda.
Hey, Jennifer Lopez is in it. Come on.
Oh my God! I'm
female empowerment movie.
That's right.
It's insane. Okay. Anyway, as I was saying, the panel will be Ken Jeong, who does The Masked Singer, Paula Abdul, Brian Austin Green, and Ashley Tisdale. That's your masked dancer panel.
Where does Brian Austin Green?
He was apparently the giraffe contestant on Masked Singer, so that qualifies him to do Masked Dancer.
Oh, he was.
Let's see, what does he know about dancing?
I don't know. I mean, besides Paul Abdul, I really don't know how they came to this conclusion.
Well, Ken Jeong did the other one, right?
He did Masked Singer.
Right. So they just need affable, nice Ken Jeong. And then...
he also does that new show, I Can See Your Voice. He's like the host of that one, too.
There's a new one where you can't hear... Well, you hear the voice, but you don't see the people.
Well, that's The Voice. How's it different?
No, you see them singing, but you can't hear them or something. I think that's what it is.
What?
It's weird. Everything is
turned...
I blame Wipeout. Because that show just got us going down the dumb trail, and we've been snowballing ever since. Like, we just went, fuck it, we're done thinking. Everything's going to be a game sort of this weird format that's pleasing to 9-year-olds, by the way. Right. Lots of colors. All right, let me hit Thompson Cigar, whether you're working from home or kicking back in the week of hanging out, want to relax a little. How about you do with a premium cigar? I got to tell you, well, I'll tell you about Thompson Cigar Company in a second. I got some deals for you. But when I went over to Dave... Dave Rubin. Yeah, I went over to Dave Rubin.
Gina.
Dave Rubin.
Don't you do that to me.
I went over to Dave Rubin's house, and at the end of the night, after dinner, we all sat around the fire pit and smoked a cigar, and it was so relaxing, but it was also like communal. Like, everyone stayed longer because they're all enjoying their cigar. So now more than ever, man. Over a century in business, best prices, biggest brands, 12,000 cigar options, all the brands you want. You can build your own 5-pack with over 300 different options to mix and match. They also have insane cigar deals, and you can do it. You can do it via email. You can do your monthly. 5 different blends delivered to your door monthly, and like I said, insane cigar deals via email daily. Number one choice for premium cigars in the U.S. Because they deliver the best customer experience. Right, Dawson?
Sit back and take a break from all the craziness with a cigar from Thompson Cigar. Now, for a limited time, Thompson is offering 15% off orders over $75 or 20% off orders over $99. To take advantage of these incredible savings, simply go to thompsoncigar.com and use promo code Corolla when you're ready to check out. The website is Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N, cigar.com, and use promo code Corolla.
The Masked Singer and I Can See Your Voice, both South Korean shows. Mm. We're taking our entertainment cues from South Korea, people.
We got look in the mirror time.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember I think MTV tried to pick it up, and I don't know how well it did, but there was a Japanese game show called Silent Library. Do you guys remember that?
No.
Where you're in a library, and all these horrible things are happening to you, and you can't make any noise because you're in a library.
Really?
That's a Japanese game show.
I actually kind of like this idea.
And I think MTV picked it up from what I remember, but we used to watch the Japanese version on YouTube.
That's all correct.
What happened to that Netflix one where it was like controversial because you're getting hit in the head with a snow shovel or whatever?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, that was...
is that still going on?
I doubt it. They were in a barn.
Yeah.
Is that the one where they stay up really late? Or they're awake for a really long time?
No, they just kind of torture people.
It's all out of like Scotland or something.
Let's do one more, Gina Graff.
All right. Well, technically, you're not supposed to be able to cast a ballot in an election in Ohio if you're an idiot, according to the Columbus Dispatch newspaper. And that is a fact. It says so right in the state constitution under Article V, Section 6, no idiot or insane persons shall be entitled to the privileges of an elector. But the archaic, nearly 170-year-old terminology was originally meant to describe people who were severely mentally disabled and not just plain stupid like we use. State lawmakers approved legislation in 2006 to remove the word, including idiot, lunatic, drunkard, and imbecile from sections of Ohio revised code, replacing those with incompetent persons. So now you can be an idiot, a drunkard, a lunatic, and still have your vote.
Vote away.
I'd rather be an idiot than incompetent. Because idiot can be short term. You can do idiotic things.
Right.
Also, it's kind of a pejorative, so it's more like the person. Like, I've had probably millions of people call me an idiot. You know what I mean? Like, I would. If you're incompetent, you're just there's no fixing you. Like, right. What do we do with incompetent?
There's
you
no
know idiotic that. Things, you know, in the moment, like take away a victory in the TiVo game and you know, put it up for grabs. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means you're an idiot.
I would much rather. I think I would rather someone refer to me as an idiot than than incompetent.
Absolutely.
Incompetent is also. Incompetent is all encompassing too. Yeah. Like, you can be an idiot and still make good money. Just be an idiot, you know, like selling custom vans or something.
Incompetent is an intellectual death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
You're just incompetent.
Oh, yeah. USC's head coach Clay Helton is incompetent. You know, someone like Lane Kiffin is just an idiot. He's a good coach.
Yeah. You beat Gina to that punch. She was coming right back.
She texted it to me.
All right. Let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, West Palm Beach, Florida, coming up, Improv, November 20th and 21st, five shows. And we're going to do two early shows. That'll be a live podcast, and then we do stand-up shows in the late show, and then we'll do a live Reasonable Doubt over there. Naples, Florida, Off the Hook. I'm going to be there January 16th and 17th, so I can come out. We'll do live stand-up and live podcast there as well. I'm your emotional support animal. Go out and get that. Leave a review on Amazon. I will read them. And until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Joe Pantoliano and Gina Grad and Bald Brian saying happy Halloween and mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up Adam's book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere. Get the links at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.